This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub, Portland's neighborhood theater since 1924. Independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizza, and salads. Located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland, laurelhursttheater.com.
Welcome to the film show on KBOO. I'm SW Conser.
And I'm Jen Chavez. Today we're doing a film festival special featuring directors from Oregon and around the world. We'll be telling you where you can see their films on the big screen and maybe even meet them in person.
Rana Neuenschwander is here in the studio from the Cascade Festival of African Films, and she's brought a special guest with her, Ethiopian filmmaker Yared Zelke. Yared's film Lamb screened at the prestigious Cannes Festival, and now it's come to Portland.
And a bit later in the show, we've got two local filmmakers joining us, Laura Gallagher and Don Jones Redstone. Don's film Sista in the Brotherhood will be screening at the Portland, Oregon Women's Film Festival, and they'll both be partaking in a panel on Friday, March 4th, about women representation in the film and television industries.
So without further ado, let's welcome Rana Neuenschwander. Welcome, Rana, back to KBOO.
Thanks.
Rana is the development coordinator for the Cascade Festival of African Films. And I'm pretty sure that every member of her family has made an appearance at KBOO. You and Baba Wage have, of course, celebrated local artists.
Right.
And your daughter, Penda Jakide, is a young documentarian who's made an appearance on the film show.
Right.
So you have arranged some very special appearances here in Oregon, and we're going to have you introduce our visiting filmmaker from Addis Ababa in just a moment. But tell us, give us a little bit of background on the Cascade Festival of African Films. It's already underway, a couple more weekends that are going on right now.
Right. Cascade Festival of African Films is in its 26th year, and we are here in celebration of Black History Month. And then also for the first week of March, where Women's Month comes in, and so we celebrate African women filmmakers for the month of March. So we go from February 5th to March 5th. Every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, we have films free to the public at either the Hollywood Film Fest, the Hollywood Theater, or most of them at PCC Cascade, Moriarty Hall. Thursdays are documentary films. We also have Thursday matinees of the feature films that show Friday nights and Saturday nights. And this Friday, we are lucky enough to have the filmmaker with us, Ethiopian filmmaker Yared Zelke, here to talk about his film, Lamb, which will show Friday.
Yes, and if some of our listeners are in or around North Portland right now, they can actually start making a beeline to the PCC campus to catch the matinee at noon of Lamb.
Right. So if you're in your car, put it to PCC Cascade Campus, Moriarty Hall, and you can see Lamb, which begins at noon. And Yared will be there right after this interview. We'll be at PCC to talk with the audience and do a short Q&A.
Well, I want to welcome Yared. Yared Zelke, thank you so much for coming. This is your first visit to Portland, I understand.
Thank you for having me. This is actually my second.
Oh, your second appearance. Very
yes.
good. So you're going to be screening your film Lamb, which was a hit at the Cannes Film Festival, and it was actually it got distribution just based on the script well before it even screened there. So it's been getting a lot of great press.
Well, I appreciate it. It's quite tricky to raise funding for a film, not only in rural Africa, in this case Ethiopia, but also with not just a boy and a lamb, but animals and children. So it took us, it was quite, you know, it's probably a very difficult thing to get anyone to invest in, but just based on the script, we were very lucky to get support.
Right. Lamb is a story that's at once familiar and strange. It's the relationship between a child and a beloved household pet. But in this case, the pet is a sheep. And you cast as the actor who really carries the film, a non-trained child actor, which was, you know, a huge risk, it seems, but it really paid off.
His name is Radiate, and plays the character A-Frame, and I, with an assistant, saw in about 6 months 7,000 people to cast, because in Ethiopia we don't really have a culture of cinema. I mean, the only director known is Haile Gerima, but really there isn't anyone trained for the camera. We do have an ancient culture of the theater, but it doesn't quite translate for filmmaking. So just had to try everyone. You know, we could meet, and half of the 7,000 were kids, and really I had to try Radiate about 4 or 5 times before I knew he was the one. But he's just gifted, in short.
Now, from what you tell me, Ethiopia, and I didn't know this before, has a thriving film scene. It's second only to Nigeria, which got a huge write-up in the New York Times just recently. Nollywood is an emerging industry in north part of Africa, northeast Africa. But Ethiopia doesn't get the international attention because it seems like, from what you tell me, most of the films made there are made for domestic consumption. They're very domestically oriented.
Yes, absolutely. So Ethiopia is a very inward-looking country, very self-referential. And if you understand its past and its culture, if you knew, then you would understand why. And so they're very much interested in looking at themselves. I mean, most people want to see an image of themselves. Even here in the U.S., people of all shades and color want to see images of themselves more on the big screen, and portrayed with, you know, with their complexity and beauty. But, you know, but a country like Ethiopia, which was like isolated historically for thousands of years, and it's developed, and a lot of it because of the mountains, 70% of Africa's mountains are in Ethiopia. So it become impenetrable, and is part of the reason why it doesn't have a colonial history, the only one. And so if you understand these, you know, it's a very inward looking society. And so, when they got a hand of when they were able to get, you know, digital camera that's affordable, they just made a ton of films, and now there's a huge industry for the local market.
Well, you were mentioning the landscape. It sounds like the landscape is one of the stars of the film. Like, you really want to introduce people, viewers, to this place that's Ethiopia, you know, and forget maybe any of the myths they've heard, but really show them the side of the Ethiopia that you know. And is there, what was your intent? Part of it is travelogue, part of it is cultural immersion.
Well, you know, for me, first it's personal. It's where I was born and raised, and so it's sort of a love letter to my country of origin. And with all the struggles and all the beauty, so it came from that place first. But as far as this sort of political part, you know, I came to, I wanted to also, you know, I've been told in the U.S. and elsewhere, you know, people think Ethiopia is a desert. Well, I've never seen a desert in Ethiopia. For the most part, instead of a flat desert, it's very mountainous and green. So it just is what it is. And you know, the world's biggest river, the Nile, 85% of it originates from Ethiopia. So that's not a desert, right? So but yeah, the landscape is definitely a character in the story, because like I said earlier, we're shaped by these mountains. We're mountain people. Where we shot the film was almost 3,000 meters. I don't know what that is. Is that almost 2 miles?
That's about a mile, I believe. Yes.
Yes. And so it's and even the city I'm from, Addis Ababa, is the world's second highest capital city. So, I mean, these mountains shape who we are, and so it's definitely a character in the story.
So you know, interestingly enough, you grew up partially in the States, in Washington, D.C., and you said that unlike the main character of the film, you don't cook and you didn't grow up with a pet. So it sounds like you were exploring some interesting themes. And the lamb certainly has symbolic meanings, especially in Ethiopia, which has a very long history of Christian identity.
Yeah. So Ethiopia predates Europe in Christianity. We've been Christians since 34 A.D., I believe. Before that, especially in the central and northern part, we were Jewish, and also we have one of the oldest Islam communities, and so for sure that's reflected in the story. And we've coexisted peacefully for a very long time, and I'm very proud of that. So part of the film is celebrating that. I think we need to see more films from the African continent that is about love and celebration and beauty, the things that I grew up with, the things that I saw. And I hope that more people from the continent will do films themselves rather than, you know, someone from the outside coming in and doing it for them.
Well, it sounds like a great opportunity. So we're talking with Yared Zelike. His film is called Lamb. And Rana, what can you tell us about how people can see the film Lamb and also have a little Q&A session with Yared?
Right. Well, as I said earlier, that we have matinees of our feature films on Thursday afternoons, beginning at noon. Today, Lamb will show, and as soon as Lamb is finished, we'll have a short Q&A with Yared Zelike, who's here now. And after that, at 2 p.m., we'll have the film that shows on Saturday night, named Stories of Our Lives, which is from Kenya, and a Kenyan filmmaker. So those two are showing as matinees today. You can still see them free at Moriarty Hall at Cascade Campus.
This is all free stuff. And right. All of this is a very good alternative to the Oscars that are coming up on Sunday. There's been some complaints, some controversy about Oscars So White, about the snubbing of Beasts of No Nation, Idris Elba's very well-regarded film that's set in Africa. And so this is a great opportunity for people to come out the next couple of weeks. And so what website, for example, can people find out more information about the schedule and about the opportunities to meet with the people up
Great.
Close and personal?
Right. Our website is easy to remember, www.africanfilmfestival.org. And if you go to that, it's a great website, very useful, very easy to use. You can click on an image of each film. It takes you to their synopsis, and also most of them have a short trailer that you can see. It gives you information on directors that are coming, and all of our other special aspects, such as Saturday's social hour that begins an hour before the films on Saturdays from 6 to 7. We have a larger African marketplace, live music from Africa, and we have a great time from 6 to 7 to socialize, and then a great film on Saturdays.
Very exciting, the Cascade Festival of African Films. Yared Zelike, director of Lamb, and Rana Neuenfinder, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a very quick break, and then we're going to be back with Jen Chavez and guests from PowFest. You're listening to The Film Show on KBOO. I'm SW Conser. Hey, welcome back to the Film Show on KBOO. I'm SW Conser.
And I'm Jen Chavez. So now let's switch gears from the international to the local for the next segment of our show. The Portland, Oregon Women's Film Festival, or POWFEST, kicks off next Thursday, March 3rd, celebrating women directors by showcasing their work and strengthening the community of women in film. The fest continues through March 6th with dozens of films by women, and you can find out tons more at POWFEST.com about their lineup. But today we want to focus on the community building element. We've invited back our recent guest, Dawn Jones Redstone, whose film Sista in the Brotherhood will play at the festival. And she's joined by Laura Gallagher, the director of last year's POWFEST selection, American Gladiators. They'll both be involved in a panel on Friday, March 4th at 1 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater to talk about opportunities and challenges for women in the film and television industries. Dawn and Laura, thank you very much for joining us. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yes.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. So we want to talk about these issues of women in film today, but I want to start by hearing a little bit about your films. I'm starting with you, Dawn. You told us a little bit about your film Sista in the Brotherhood on last month's show. It is screening March 3rd at 7 p.m. at the Hollywood as part of this festival. But I wanted to quickly revisit it since you're back and because I thought it was so powerful. It's the day in the life of a black female carpenter who is basically put through the ringer by white guys on a job site. She's given the delightful nickname Quota, and at another point, Gloria Steinem. I swear I was yelling at my screen the whole movie. Seeing that we're talking about another industry in which women are underrepresented and sometimes discriminated against, film and television, I see a parallel here. Not only was this a female-centric story, but you prioritized having a largely female production crew. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So the film was inspired partly by my own experience as a carpenter, but also by the doctoral thesis of the co-executive producer, Dr. Roberta Hunt, about black tradeswomen. And so both she and I were very familiar with the lack of inclusiveness in the construction industry. And it only made sense that when we turned to start hiring folks for our film that we sought to be equally inclusive. And so we actually had, I've been saying 100%, we had technically 93% female production crew.
Oh, really?
Because Roberta's husband worked on, helped out as well. And he makes extremely helpful. So
he makes up 7%.
Yes.
93 is a pretty good number.
And 50% women of color.
That's fantastic. I mean, because, you know, like the we can hearken, obviously, the dominant conversation of Oscars so white right now, but throughout the film and television industries, people of color are underrepresented as well. Great to hear a little bit more about your film, Sista in the Brotherhood. And Laura, you are also a filmmaker whose short film, American Gladiator, played as part of POWFEST last year. The film follows two young girls, sisters, one of whom suffers from an unspecified, seemingly life-threatening illness. It's about them navigating that in the kind of frustrated emotional fights siblings have with each other. And I really, it really made me think of my own childhood with my own sister. The question is, can you be mad at your sister when she might be dying? So Laura, what are the most important elements of that story to you and how it represents young women?
I was, you know, excited to make a film about little girls that really doesn't have anything to do with them being girls. Mm-hmm. You know, they're kind of just little kids and genderless in a lot of ways, and they're just as mean and nasty and feisty and jealous as any little boy could be. So that was a big thing for me. But it's also based on my own experiences with my older sister, actually. And I have three sisters, so a lot of my work centers around sisters and kind of female relationships and how complicated they can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's you. The younger sister will kind of get the older sister in this film in trouble and act really upset about something, but then be kind of laughing behind the parents' back. And my younger sister did exactly that. Mm-hmm. She would point and laugh at me after she faked crying to get me in trouble. Anyway, I loved your film as well.
Thanks.
Both of your guys' films. So surely many people make films about women and about girls, or at least with female characters, but it's different than making a female-centric film. I don't know if you guys know of the Bechdel test, created by Alison Bechdel, but to pass, films must have two female characters talking to each other about something other than a man, and a shocking amount of movies fail this test miserably. Women can be in films without having their stories properly told. Are women filmmakers better equipped to tell these stories?
Yes, absolutely. I also note that our film barely passes because there happens to be a dream sequence, but most of the film is about her experience in a male-dominated environment.
But I thought about that, but you do have
yes,
two
it
women.
Does happen. I think it's interesting because when we think about like this critique around the film industry, I think it largely started out looking at the portrayal. And then now I think slowly folks have realized that the only way we're going to get the representation and the portrayals we want is to change not only how we're showing people in front of the camera, but to look at who is behind the camera.
Mm-hmm. And I think that even just thinking about your film, Dawn, because I got a chance to watch it also, I think if you have a female protagonist, even if they're not talking to another woman or a man, or you're still following along their story and their mm-hmm. It's a visual medium more than it is a talking medium. So
that's
I don't
a
know.
Point.
I'm a little, the talking thing is it's an interesting thing to talk about, but having I think a central female character and really following along with her motivations and fears and passions, I think that's the important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Both of your films do that, of course. A few months ago on this show, I interviewed someone with the ACLU about a campaign about gender discrimination in the film and television industries. This wasn't only the issue of not enough women, but also about how women who are in the industry are treated and talked to. And they got a lot of shocking feedback from women in the industry across the country. The thing is, this seems to be something that everyone's been aware of, and yet it's persisting. Why do you think that?
Which part's persisting just in general? Why is it a problem?
Gender discrimination and women remain underrepresented in mm-hmm. these films and mediums, despite of this general unspoken knowledge that mm-hmm. it needs to change. Mm-hmm. Why so slow? I guess is the question.
We're talking about a culture change, and mm-hmm. I think that is something that is slow. And again, I know a lot about it in terms of the construction industry, and the numbers for women in that industry have barely moved. We're now focusing more on it in terms of the workers themselves in the film industry, and so I'm hopeful that things are starting to change. I'm excited to see like what happened with the Oscars and the hashtag #OscarsSoWhite and some of the new measures being adopted by the Academy. But I think that's also really a small gesture, and a lot more needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. I think, there's lots of programs and I don't know, there's degree programs you can get and MFAs and everything like that. But I think when you get down to it, film, a lot of things are like the construction industry, I'm sure, is an apprentice-based thing. It just is. I mean, I think that you're always kind of looking for someone that, is going to help you out. It's so hard to get things made in general. And so I think I don't know. Yeah, it's people really needing to look for somebody like themselves. But also, if there's only men in these leadership positions that are looking for someone like themselves, like it's gonna fulfill that same cycle over
right.
and over and over. So right. I think it's partially like what I don't know, just the nature of this work, because it's like you're working long hours, you're working really long days, you want to be working with friends, you want to be working with people that have like a similar viewpoint as you. So it's tricky.
Well, and I think it's also particularly important when we talk about the film industry, just because, films, TV shows, music videos, these kind of images and popular culture, this is surrounding us all the time. And we're taking in these, messages, and it has a compounding effect. So if we can make this change, it can change other industries as well, mm-hmm. which is what we're trying to do with our film.
Right. We just have a minute left, but and you guys have spoken to this already a little bit, but what do you think are some solutions? More women in leadership roles, more programs and opportunities for women? How would you answer that question of how women can have a space to thrive and succeed where they may not today?
I think people wanting it and people wanting to see and going to see movies about women or about themselves or wanting to see different perspectives. I mean, that's the number one thing, and that's something that all audiences can do. You know, you're not just a passive person. Like, you can go out, you can help people to make the films that they're trying to make and that also might speak to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Hire women, go see female-centric films, come to POWFest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. POWFest... we can find more information about it at POWFest.com. It's once again going from March 3rd to March 6th. And one more time, the panel that you guys will be participating in, talking about some of the issues we've been speaking about today, is on Friday, March 4th at the Hollywood Theater at 1 p.m. So today I've been speaking with filmmakers Don Jones-Redstone and Laura Gallagher. Laura and Don, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
You're listening to The Film Show on KBOO. I'm S.W. Konser.
And I'm Jen Chavez.
And now I think it's time for this month's film events calendar.
Indeed it is. So here are a few film events coming up in the next month that might be of interest. The Northwest Film Center's Portland International Film Festival continues for three more days, today through Saturday the 27th. Still over a dozen films left, including PIFF After Dark screenings at Cinema 21 from this year's annual showcase of short and feature-length New World Cinema. More info on remaining films, showtimes, and venues at nwfilm.org.
On March 5th and 6th, local film collective The Cinema Project hosts Dirty Looks, a bi-coastal platform for queer experimental film, video, and performance. Night one will be a selection of work from Dirty Look's New York City programming in its first 3 years, and night two will present Hardcore Home Movies, a collection of work drawn from punk and queercore archives. Both shows start at 7:30 at NXT Industries on Northwest Davis. Details at cinemaproject.org.
Kicking off on March 7th and continuing every Monday in March at 7:30 p.m., the Hollywood Theater will host the series Light and Shadows, Masters of Cinematography, paying tribute to some of the greatest cinematographers in the history of cinema, featuring 35mm prints of McCabe and Mrs. Miller, The Godfather, Days of Heaven, and more. More information at hollywoodtheater.org.
On Thursday, March 10th, KBOO's film series KBOO at the Clinton continues with a 7 p.m. screening of Salt of the Earth. It's a McCarthy-era film from 1954 that depicts a strike by Mexican-American mine workers in New Mexico. Details at cstpdx.com or on our website, kboo.fm.
The Church of Film, a gathering for the reverence and worship of film, or of cinema rather, reconvenes at the Clinton Street Theater on March 23rd. They'll pay tribute to the French New Wave director Jacques Rivette with a program of his work at 7 p.m. Details at cstpdx.com.
On Thursday, March 24th at 7 p.m., the Northwest Film Center will present An Evening with Curtis Hoff. The Portland filmmaker will be introducing a collection of his work which blends animation, documentary, and the surreal to examine abstract patterns in nature. More info at nwfilm.org.
On Wednesday, March 30th at 7 p.m., the Northwest Film Center will host An Evening with Jodi Darby. The Portland documentarian behind the award-winning film Arresting Power, Resisting Police Violence in Portland, Oregon, will introduce a program of some of her earlier short works. Details at nwfilm.org.
And on March 31st at 7:30 p.m., the Portland Ecofilm continues at the Hollywood Theater with a screening of the documentary Taking Root. The film tells the story of Kenyan woman Wangari Maathai, whose simple act of planting trees grew into the Green Belt Movement, a nationwide movement led by women and girls that safeguards the environment and protects human rights, social justice, and peace. More information at portlandecofilmfest.org.
And that about wraps up our film calendar and our show today. I'm Jen Chavez.
I'm S.W. Konser. Thanks to our guests today, Yared Zelike, Rana Neuenschwander, Laura Gallagher, and Don Jones-Redstone. And thanks, as always, to the Oregon Media Production Association for their support and collaboration. And thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web.
The audio for the show will be available later today on our archive page, kboo.fm/thefilmshow. And you can keep up with us on Twitter, too, at kboofilmshow.
Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.
And now the KBOO News at noon for Thursday, February 25th, 2016. The Corvallis School District is being assertive about bridging the achievement gaps so economically disadvantaged students, Latino students, English as second language students, and students with disabilities will have a better chance at success. District administrators introduced its new Equity Action Plan to the Corvallis School Board on Monday. This plan will include increasing the number of preschool classes, expanding college prep programs at middle and high schools, making sure each high school student participates in at least one extracurricular activity, more instructional coaches to train teachers, more professional development focused on inclusive teaching, programs to help recruit more bilingual teachers, and eliminating fees paid by families for classroom materials